So one of the qualities of the Buddha is anuttaro purisadhammasarati. And in English, this means supreme trainer of people to be tamed. That if it was possible for someone's mind to be purified, if it was possible for someone to give up their anger, their hatred, their delusion, then the Buddha would be able to help them with that. Not everyone's mind is ready for that, but the Buddha was a kind of teacher where even when he was in very difficult situations, if the person that he was speaking with had the possibility of understanding his teachings, he could share them in a way that would be beneficial. So there was a certain series of incidents that happened when before the Buddha came to Rajagaha, I think. So he had already come to Rajagaha. This is a city in northern India where the Buddha spent a lot of time. Most of the time he lived in Savatthi, which is a little bit further north, but he did very frequently come to this area. The king was a disciple of his, King Bimbisara. But there were also a lot of other spiritual teachers living in this area. And there were a lot of Brahmins living in that area. So you may know that Indian society was then and is now divided into different castes of people. And one of those castes is the Brahmin caste, the caste of people that's responsible for maintaining the Vedas. And so they existed when the Buddha was alive and had their own set of teachings and their own set of beliefs. And some of them liked the Buddha and his teachings and his disciples. Some of them did not. In fact, some of them really did not, and tried to get the Buddha in trouble, tried to pull people away from the Buddha. So this incident takes place with one of these Brahmin families. So it begins, "Thus have I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Rajagaha, in the bamboo grove, the squirrel's sanctuary. Now on that occasion, the wife of a certain Brahmin of the Bharadvaja clan, a Brahmin lady named Dhananjani, had full confidence in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha." So these are the triple gem that we recited earlier. "Once while the Brahmin lady, Dhananjani, was bringing the Brahmin his meal, she stumbled, whereupon she uttered three times this inspired verse, 'Homage to the Blessed One, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one. Homage to the Blessed One, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one. Homage to the Blessed One, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one.'" So these very same verses that we recited even just now when we began this this talk. So most of us, we trip and we might curse. Right? Even then, people might do that. But this woman had such confidence in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, that even a slight difficulty like this, right, tripping, immediately she brought to mind the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. However, the man that she was living with, her husband, I guess, was not a disciple of the Buddha. So, when she said this, the Brahmin of the Bhadradvaja clan said to her, "For the slightest thing, this wretched woman spouts out praise of that shaveling ascetic." So not very nice, eh? This was one of the ways that people would insult Buddhist monks, because not all ascetics in the time of the Buddha shaved their heads. Some of them grew long hair with the dreadlocks. And even the Brahmins wouldn't shave their heads completely. So one of the ways that people would insult the Buddha and his disciples was calling them, you know, bald-headed. This Brahmin curses the woman, curses the Buddha. And then he says to her, "Now, wretched woman, I'm going to go refute the doctrine of that teacher of yours." So he gets so angry hearing about the faith of this woman, this innocent woman, that not only does he curse her, not only does he insult the Buddha, but he says, "Yeah, I'm gonna destroy your faith. I'm gonna go prove that the Buddha's wrong, that the Buddha doesn't know what he's talking about." So fortunately, this woman, she must have not only had a lot of trust in the Buddha, a lot of faith in the Buddha, but must have taken those teachings into her heart, because she didn't get angry. She says, "I do not see anyone, Brahman, in this world with its devas, Mara, and Brahma, in this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans, who could refute the doctrine of the Blessed One, the Arahant, the Perfectly Enlightened One." So she says, no one, not a god, not a human being, not a Brahmin, not another ascetic, could prove that what the Buddha has to say is not true. And then she says, "But go, Brahman. When you have gone, you will understand." Right? She says, "But that's okay. You go. You try. Right? Once you try, then you'll understand what's happening in this world." So the Brahmin left. And he seems to have had some amount of control over his anger, because when he went to the Buddha, he approached and chit-chatted a little bit. He was still angry, but he had some nice, polite conversation. He didn't bow down, but he sat to one side, and he spoke to the Buddha in a verse. He says to the Buddha, "Having slain what, does one sleep soundly? Having slain what, does one not sorrow? What is the one thing, O Gautama, whose killing you approve?" So this Brahmin would have been trained in very deep spiritual teachings, and would have obviously known how to compose verses, and he must have had something in mind when he came up with this question. What do you need to kill in the world to sleep soundly? What do you need to kill so you don't sorrow, so you don't cry? Now, the Brahmins didn't necessarily keep this precept of not killing. Sometimes they even made sacrifices, right, as part of their rituals. And certainly they would have known that the Buddha came not from the Brahmin clan, but from the clan of warriors, the caste of the kings and the soldiers. So maybe he thought that he could trick the Buddha into agreeing that there is something, you know, someone in the world that we should kill to live peacefully. So then the Buddha replies to him. He says, "Having slain anger, one sleeps soundly. Having slain anger, one does not sorrow. The killing of anger, O Brahman, with its poisoned root and honey tip. This is the killer, the noble one's praise. For having slain that, one does not sorrow. So, the Buddha really loved to use language in a way that could go right to our hearts, right? Because we all understand killing, right? We all understand that as human beings we have the opportunity to kill. It's very easy to kill things that are less powerful than we are, that we may be afraid of being killed by beings that are more powerful than us. And we know that the very first precept that the Buddha asks us to keep is to give up killing. But yet, the Buddha is able to take this word, killing, and say, yes, there is something we should kill. We should kill anger. And again, the Buddha talks about this. So the Buddha understood what was going on in our minds, why we may act in certain ways, sometimes in different ways, other times. He understood that on the surface, we can see many of the difficulties that our mind has. We can see on the surface being greedy for things. When we're children, we're greedy for very childish things, right? The bigger slice of cake, right? When we're children and we have a brother or a sister, we want the biggest piece of cake. As we get older, we want the bigger piece of land, maybe, or the bigger car, right? Or the bigger position of authority. But all through our life, we see this wanting material things. When we're young, we may have a childish kind of anger. An anger when someone takes away one of our toys. An anger when we get yelled at. As we get older, the types of things that we get angry at mature, right? We can start to be angry at people that we've never even met, like politicians, right? Never met the politician, but yet we can get ourselves angry about them. We hear something that they say, and immediately, right, that fire starts burning, right? How could they say that? They don't represent me. You know, what sort of defiled mind they must have to say those kinds of things, right? It's there. It's not the same childish kind of anger, but it's anger that's there. We may have, when we're young, very childish delusions, right? A child might even cry when a rainbow disappears, right? They see a beautiful rainbow, and as it starts to fade away, maybe they even start crying. Right? Because they had this delusion that the rainbow was going to last forever. Right? And as adults, we can look at that and say, ah, that foolish child. Don't they know better? Right? But then something happens to the things that we like that we weren't expecting to disappear, and we cry. Right? Our loved ones pass away. And we weren't planning for that. Right? We were planning on our children outliving us, but they don't always. So the Buddha understood that this tendency to be greedy, this tendency to be attached to things, this tendency to get angry, this tendency to be deluded about the real nature of the world, it's something that we can see on the surface. And it's also something that's rooted very deeply in the mind. That sometimes it's not so apparent, right? Maybe we become very wealthy, and so we can be generous. We don't really feel like we're holding on to things very tightly, right? Or we've We've trained the mind to a certain degree not to be attached to material things. But until we've completely pulled out that root, the attachment can spring up again. We may seem like a really easygoing, mellow person. Other people are astounded that we don't get angry when people badmouth us, right, or harass us. And it could very well be that we just don't see that in our lives. But unless we've pulled out the root cause of anger, this anger as a root, it can pop up again when we're not expecting it. So when the Buddha talks about overcoming these things, he wants us to know there's a cause, and it's possible to uproot that cause. But as long as we don't, then we shouldn't be surprised when these things happen, when we get angry, right? When we get attached to something, right? It's normal. If we have that root in the mind, then it's going to happen. As we start to see the danger in these things, we start to see how much trouble we cause ourselves and other people when we get angry, when we're greedy for things, when we're jealous, right? When we're deluded, then we may feel a sense of urgency, right? I have to do something to fix this problem. But it's a really tough problem, right? It's very few people can immediately pull out that root. So it may be for a long time we just have to look at what's going on. We work hard to train the mind, but yet we're still seeing it happen. So if we don't understand this, if we don't understand that there's this very deeply rooted ignorance, very deeply rooted anger and greed, we may think, oh, well, it should be easy just to do away with this. Right? I can think back on my life, the times I've been angry. Now I see it was wrong to act that way. I understand the situation differently. I'm not going to get angry again. Right? It's a good intention, very wholesome intention, but that may not pull out the root of the problem. So, we listen to the Buddha's reply again. He says, having slain anger, one sleeps soundly. So, we can think about this in the ordinary sense, at that surface level, that if we get angry at somebody, especially late in the evening, it can be hard to sleep. Something horrible happens at work, we were mistreated, maybe even someone tries to hurt us, right? And as we lay in bed, the mind just again and again and again and again, and again, right? Thinking about ways that we were right and they were wrong, ways that we could get even with them. There's an unending source of things that the mind can do with anger and injustice. And when that happens, we don't sleep peacefully. Maybe we fall asleep, but then we wake up. We've probably had that happen. Something disturbing our mind so much that we can't stay asleep. Or that we wake up very early. Right? And in a time that might be completely ideal for meditating. We're doing a different kind of mental development, right? It's still the mind working, but it's the mind working in the wrong direction, going backwards, right? Because we've seen with this loving kindness meditation how we can use the mind's ability to think, the ability to have ideas, right? That we try to train the mind in thinking, may I be free from anger. May I be free from jealousy. May May even my enemies be free from anger, be free from greed, be free from harm. Right? So if we're wise, if we associate it with good friends that encourage us in the right way, we can use the mind to help the mind. If we don't, if we let the mind dictate what it wants to do, not that it's a separate thing, but when thoughts of anger arise, if we just give in to those, right? Because some people will say, this anger is very important, I need to have this anger to help me. I don't know exactly what people think, but they try and justify anger in a million different ways, right? Which isn't to say I haven't justified it, but we do that, don't we? And this line, the Buddha says, with its poisoned root and honeyed tip. So sometimes, if we're really honest, there's a sweetness to the anger. We feel really alive. When someone's wronged us, and we feel like, they're an evil person. I do not deserve this, and I'm gonna, my anger is what's going to carry me through this situation, right? That I'm gonna get even with them, and we think about how we'll get even with them. We find out something bad that happened to them, right? And that anger that was hidden down there springs back up. We say, finally they got it, right? Karma, they got their karma. There's a sweetness to it when the mind's deluded. But at its root, poisonous, right? There's no way that story ends good for us, thinking those kinds of thoughts. When we meditate with anger, when we train the mind again and again with anger, it becomes a stronger and stronger nature. This is what the Buddha said, that the way that we allow our mind to think, slowly and slowly, that becomes the nature of the mind. It's a two-way thing, right? That the more we get angry, the easier it will become to get angry. And it's basically a practice of getting angry, right? But if we try and practice the other way, if we try and practice not getting angry, then slowly, little by little, that'll become our habit. Now, this isn't to say that there aren't people that are going to do terrible things to us, right? That's one thing. What we're talking about is protecting something very precious in our own minds. It also doesn't mean that we need to hang out with people that treat us badly, right? One of the fundamental parts of spiritual development that the Buddha taught is surrounding ourselves with good people. If we're surrounded by people who get angry, then that's also going to start to become the nature of our mind. That if the people around us are very greedy, then we might start to feel like we need to protect what we have. When the people around us really like to show off the results of their good karma, show off their wealth, then it's very hard for us not to get caught up in those things. Right? So the Buddha said we need to surround ourselves with good people because we want to pick up their good habits. We want to have examples around us of people who believe that it's possible to give up anger. Right? Because it's going to be very hard to surround ourselves with people who never get angry. That's the goal. I mean, that's perfect. But it's a little tricky, right? We can kind of draw the line somewhere and find people that are not violent to surround us. But even if we're around people who do get angry but recognize that anger is not a good habit, right? then even if those people get angry at us, we can think, yes, they're getting angry, but I know that they have good qualities in their mind. I know that they're going to regret that anger. And they may even come to us and say, you know, I'm really sorry that I got angry. It's not something that I want to be doing. Right? Even to surround ourselves with people like that is extremely valuable. So all of this isn't to say that we need to let people abuse us, that that it's not wrong to harm others, to hurt other people. We're not saying that at all. We're saying, how should my mind act in those situations? Right? Because we can remove ourselves from the situation physically, but mentally be totally there. Right? We can separate from those people that have hurt us completely, but yet we can still turn it over and over again in the mind. The Buddha said the mind travels faster than anything. In just an instant, we can travel back in time, we can travel around the world, and be right back in that position where we were angry at someone. I think everybody's experienced that, right? Like, you're doing fine, but then you maybe see somebody at the grocery store, or somebody reminds you of the situation, it may even be worse than it was the first time, right? Because we spent so much time thinking about it and designing it in our mind. So this is about how we fix that problem, how we can really sleep peacefully. So the Buddha says, having slain anger, one sleeps soundly. So in an ordinary sense, we can just see in our own lives, right? We don't get angry, and we can sleep peacefully. But there's also a deeper level. Once someone asked the Buddha, as part of this friendly conversation that usually happens when someone greets the Buddha, they asked, Venerable Sir, did you sleep well? Did you sleep peacefully? And the Buddha says, yes, I slept peacefully. If there's anyone in the world that we can say that they slept peacefully, I am one of those people. Because I've completely removed greed from my mind. I've completely removed hatred. I've completely removed delusion. So the Buddha says, when I sleep, it's completely peaceful. So that's what we're trying to work towards. Not just forgiving the person that hurt us today and sleeping and not thinking about it, but really training the mind to the point where we removed anger completely, removed hatred, removed greed, removed delusion. So when we share these teachings, we always have to point out what the goal is, what the final game, you know, the end game. The Buddha's teachings are useful at the level that we're at. They're useful to us as we progress on the path, and they have this ultimate usefulness to us. And so when you come here, when you hear sermons, when you read the Buddha's teachings, it's important that we remember that the Buddha taught teachings to help us on many different levels, and that he gave us teachings that can take us to the very final goal. Right? That we can follow these teachings and truly never get angry. Right? Completely pull up that root. Completely pull up greed from the mind. It's very hard to imagine, because we've known that our whole lives. And we may have never even heard of someone. You know, we may not even know that that's a quality of the Buddha, let alone have had a chance to meet someone like that. But still, it's there. That's still part of the teachings. So when this Brahmin heard just this one verse, his mind was changed. So when this was said, the Brahmin of the Bharadvaja clan said to the Blessed One, "Magnificent Master Gotama, Magnificent Master Gotama, the Dhamma has been made clear in many ways by Master Gotama, as though he were turning upright what had been turned upside down, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go for refuge to Master Gotama and to the Dhamma and to the Bhikkhu Sangha." So remember who this person is. Earlier, just a few hours before, he had insulted the Buddha, he had cursed him. Not only that, but he had insulted a disciple of the Buddha, right? Even just insulting a sincere and honest disciple of the Buddha, that's not good karma, right? But here, he even insulted the Buddha, which in terms of karma, that's not good karma, right? It's a verbal kind of karma. He didn't physically attack the Buddha, but that verbal karma, that mental karma, very powerful bad karma. But yet, he had the chance to have his mind change. So this is also something very important for us to remember, is that we all come to the table with a suitcase full of karma. Right? A very large suitcase. But for the most part, the things in that suitcase don't limit our ability to understand the Dhamma. There's a few very, very serious things that can put off attaining enlightenment. But we can see this Brahmin, even though that day he had committed some very bad karma, he was able to open up his mind to the Buddha's teachings. So not only that, not only did he go for refuge, but he says to the Blessed One, "May I receive the going forth under Master Gotama. May I receive the high ordination." So he asked to become a monk. Kind of incredible. But this is the nature of the Buddha's ability to teach. This is the nature of these teachings to really change our worldview. Right? Because it's really a very different way of looking at the world, isn't it? To think that we don't have to get angry when people insult us. And we don't have to be sad when we lose the things that we love so much. That there are people in the world who have completely eliminated the possibility of ever getting angry. Right? It's a very different way of looking at the world. If we've been raised all of our life to say, yeah, this is the only option. This pain that we cause ourselves, there's no way to escape from. So then the Brahmin of the Bharadvaja clan received the going forth under the Blessed One. He received the higher ordination. So the first part of becoming a monk is shaving the hair, giving up the clothes that you normally wear, wearing the robes. And if you're old enough, then you can immediately become a fully ordained monk. And that's what happened in this situation, that he was accepted into the order of monks. And then the discourse concludes. "And soon, not long after his ordination, dwelling alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, the venerable Bharadvaja, by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, in this very life, entered and dwelled in that unsurpassed goal of the holy life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the household life into homelessness." So, this man, whose mind was so quickly changed, was able to achieve the final goal of the Buddha's teaching. He directly knew destroyed his birth. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being. And the Venerable Bharadvaja became one of the arahants. So, what does this mean? He pulled out that root of anger. He pulled out that root of greed, of craving. He pulled out the root of ignorance. He saw the danger. Right? He must have seen, you know, here I was so arrogant that I insulted the Buddha. I even thought that I could teach the Buddha something. I even thought that I could prove the Buddha wrong. See how easy it is to do dangerous things, to commit bad karma. Right? Because until we attain at least the first stage of enlightenment, then really all bets are off when we pass away from this life. The good karma that we've done, we have to experience it at some point. But we can't be sure where we're going to be reborn. If it's in the human world, heavenly world, animal world, ghost world, hell realms, we can't be sure until we attain at least the first stage of enlightenment. So he could have had this thought, you know, now I have this opportunity to learn from this teacher. If I don't make an effort in this life, I could do even worse in my next life. I might never be born for eons and eons in a time when a Buddha is alive. So it's not surprising that he could stir up this energy to say, yes, I'm in the best possible situation. I'm going to work to try and understand these teachings. So, this man, this Brahmin, not only stirred up something in himself, but he stirred up something in other people as well. Unfortunately, what he stirred up in other people was anger. Because, not everybody was a big fan of the Buddha. So, in the next sutta, the next discourse, again, on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling in Rajagaha, in the bamboo grove, the squirrel's sanctuary. The Brahmin Akkosika Bharadvaja, Bharadvaja the abusive, so that was his name actually, Akkosa, abusive. So this person from the same clan heard, it is said that the Brahmin of the Bharadvaja clan has gone forth from the household life into homelessness, under the ascetic Gotama. Angry and displeased, he approached the Blessed One and abused and reviled him with rude, harsh words. So, even though we can sit here and be very happy hearing about this Brahmin whose mind was changed, who decided to dedicate his whole life to the Buddha's teachings, but his relative got angry. Thought, you know, this bald-headed guy is coming in here and stealing away our people. Right? He's insulting us, saying that our teachings are not good enough, that there's something else beyond what we teach. He doesn't have any business here. And he got angry. And this Brahmin didn't just go to the Buddha angry, but directly to his face, he insulted the Buddha. He criticized the Buddha. Called the Buddha names. Right? Terrible bad karma. Terrible bad karma. But does the Buddha get angry? No. When this Brahmin had finished speaking, the Blessed One said to him, "What do you think, Brahmin? Do your friends and colleagues, kinsmen and relatives, as well as guests, come to visit you?" The Brahmin says, "Sometimes they come to visit. Well, do you then offer them some food or a meal or a snack? And he says, sometimes I do, Master Gotama. And the Buddha asks him, but if they do not accept it from you, this snack that you give to the guests, then to whom does the food belong? And the Brahmin says, well, if they don't accept it from me, then it still belongs to us. It still belongs to me. And the Brahmin may have had no idea what the Buddha was talking about, right? Kind of an odd thing. You go and criticize and insult someone and they ask you about your hospitality. We could have easily thought that this man didn't have no, any sense of hospitality, but the Buddha asks him. And he says, if they don't accept it from me, then the food still belongs to us. And the Buddha says to him, so too, Brahman, we who do not abuse anyone, who do not scold anyone, who do not rail against anyone, refuse to accept from you the abuse and scolding and tirade you let loose at us. It still belongs to you, Brahman. It still belongs to you. So he says, yeah, I'm not going to take that gift that you seem to want to give me of anger. That anger is yours. It still belongs to you. The Buddha says, Brahman, one who abuses his own abuser, who scolds the one who scolds him, who rails against the one who rails at him, he is said to partake of the meal, to enter upon an exchange. But we do not partake of your meal. We do not enter upon an exchange. It still belongs to you, Brahman. It still belongs to you, Brahman. So, can we think that way? When someone is insulting us, when someone is angry at us, someone honking at us, you know, on the road, or flips us off as they drive past us, can we say, yeah, that middle finger, that belongs to you. That's on your hand. You can keep it. I don't need another middle finger. I have two. Right? Can we think that way? It's a little tricky. It's a little tricky, and if we've never met anyone who thinks that way, if we've never heard that that's possible, if we've never heard about the value, if we've never heard that we actually hurt ourselves when we accept that gift, we may not think that it's possible. People may even criticize us, right, for not accepting that gift. So, the Brahmin's mind still wasn't completely transformed, because he felt like the Buddha was saying these words out of anger. Right? We can imagine ourselves saying something like that, like, I'm not going to take your anger. That's your anger. Right? So this Brahmin thinks that maybe this is the mindset that the Buddha has when he's giving this teaching. So the Brahmin says, the king and his retinue, remember in this part of the country, the king was a disciple of the Buddha, King Bimbisara. The king and his retinue understand the ascetic Gotama to be an arahant, someone who's fully enlightened. Yet Master Gotama still gets angry. So he's accusing the Buddha of getting angry, saying those words out of anger. And the Buddha says, how can anger arise in one who is angerless, in the tamed one of righteous living, in one liberated by perfect knowledge, in the stable one who abides in peace? So he says, no, that's just not possible, that I've pulled out that root. I don't have the ingredients, right, to bake that cake. It's just not going to get baked. We don't have what it takes to make that cake. The Buddha says, one who repays an angry man with anger thereby makes things worse for himself. Not repaying an angry man with anger, one wins a battle hard to win. Usually we don't think about it that way, do we? usually we think about the battle as, you know, having the right comeback, right? Or, you know, bullying someone into backing off. But the Buddha says, if your mind can be controlled enough that you don't attack that person back, that that's a battle. That's a true battle. The one that, that we fight inside our mind. He says, that person wins a battle, hard to win. This person practices for the welfare of both, his own and the others. When knowing that his foe is angry, he mindfully maintains his peace. When he achieves the cure of both, his own and the others, the people who consider him a fool are unskilled in the Dhamma. So right here he recognizes the world is going to be full of people who think that, it's a foolish person who doesn't let themselves get angry. But that in fact, by not acting in anger, we help ourselves and we even help the other person. But yet, in the world, many people don't understand that. Most people don't understand that. Right? They may think that we're afraid, that we're not strong enough to stand up to someone. Right? And that's the thing, is that we don't have these role models that can show the difference between standing up for ourselves and getting angry. That so far, it's all been mixed together. That the only way we know how to stand up for ourselves is to get angry. But in fact, the way that we can take care of ourselves, stand up for ourselves the most, is controlling this anger. Right? That we can act in a proper way, do what needs to be done, separate ourselves if we need to separate. But we can do it without anger. And then when we walk away, we've really walked away. We're not tied mentally to the situation. So, again, this teaching went right to this Brahmin's heart. And the Brahmin says the very same thing. He says, magnificent, Master Gautama, magnificent. You've shown the way for someone who is lost. Like you've turned upright something that was tipped over. Like you've held up a lamp for me to see in the darkness. He went for refuge to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and also asked to become a monk. This very same situation that had made him angry, hearing that one of his relatives became a monk, he too saw the value there and became a monk. And he too practiced. Remember, he could think, oh, here I was, I to the Buddha's face I insulted him. Right? He might have felt very shy, very ashamed around the other monks. And the way that he could express his gratitude to the Buddha, right? He could ask forgiveness and the Buddha could give him forgiveness, but the real way that he can ask for forgiveness to the Buddha, show the Buddha gratitude, is to put these teachings into practice. To really repay the Buddha in that way. And so this Brahmin as well practiced hard and was able to pull out the root of hatred, the root of greed, craving, delusion, and also become an arahant. And I'd like to say that he also inspired great happiness in his kinsmen. But he didn't. Someone else heard about that, got angry, and also went to the Buddha. We don't have time to hear that person's story today. And it didn't even end with the next person, right? This whole chain of angry people. Like we know families like that, don't we? Everybody seems kind of angry. But even though the chain was a little ugly as it was moving along, it ended up something very beautiful. So, in this time together, we've heard teachings from the Buddha. We've got to meet human beings just like us who hadn't given up anger, hadn't given up pride, hadn't given up greed, but were able to take these teachings into their heart and make a change. So, having heard these teachings, having met these individuals, having seen the great power of transformation that the Buddha's teachings have, may we also take these teachings into our hearts. May we reflect on them wisely. May we always be surrounded by people who encourage us to practice these teachings. And through the practicing of these instructions from the Buddha, may we too one day experience for ourselves the supreme bliss of Nibbana in this Gautama Buddha's dispensation. So these discourses come from this book called The Connected Discourses. They're organized by topic. They come from the first volume. There's actually five volumes in this book. And in that first volume, all of the discussions take place in the form of verses. And that section is maybe 20 or so discussions that the Buddha has with Brahmins, all with Brahmins. Not all as angry as those first were. Don't want you to get the wrong impression about Brahmins.